Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman V20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20 volt max XR 4 amp hour battery kit. Dad knows our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Tulare Lake, Tulare County, California, 1 million years ago, 5 million years ago, filled with people, with creatures called megafauna, saber-toothed tiger, elephants, camels, lots of camels wandering around Southern California. You can find them all in the tar pits in Los Angeles. But today, Tulare Lake, until recently, was a vast emptiness at the edge of an extremely fertile area of California, Tulare County, the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of the solar system. And then the rains came, and then the snow came, and then it got warm, and the snow's melting. So I welcome Devin Nunes of the Devin Nunes Podcast and Videocast. He's also the CEO and guru of Truth Social, who is my correspondent on the water situation, the hydrology of the San Joaquin Valley, which has been politically damaged for many years, and now Mother Nature and the snow melt because it's getting warm in California, and 6 stories of snow have to go somewhere to get to the rivers. Are they going to fill Tulare Lake so that it's a threat to the region? Devin, a very good evening to you. When last we spoke, Tulare Lake was okay, but you were concerned that the melt would come too fast and flood the neighboring area. What is the status now? Good evening to you.
Well, thanks, John. And you actually bringing back those dinosaurs. About 20 years ago, 30 years ago, they actually found a brontosaurus out here as they were not very deep. So yeah, this area definitely had dinosaurs back in the day. And there's a farmer named J.G. Boswell who came here in the 1920s and 30s, and at a time when that was just kind of an area that was the old lake bottom that some years would be swampy, most years would just be dry as a bone, usually would for sure be dry by July, August. And when I say dry, dry with tumbleweeds type dry. But he had a vision that some of that land was going to be very fertile. And it's basically the low spot of the San Joaquin Valley. In the central southern San Joaquin Valley, it's kind of the low spot. So, and it's flat. Like you wouldn't see it from, you couldn't notice it if you're just driving down the Highway 99 looking at the future high-speed rail that is now basically just looks like a Greek ruin. You wouldn't be able to see it, but there's just a slight difference in the elevation, maybe 10, 20, 30 feet at the most. And that area, J.G. Boswell, had a vision of being able to farm that area, especially as all the dams and this great water infrastructure was being built all over the state of California when the state of California actually was forward looking. And he said, well, gosh, when these dams get built, that whole old lake bottom is not even going to be used for an overflow anymore. There'll probably hardly ever be water out there. So I'm going to go out there and buy it. And then I'm also going to buy up all the water rights. And he became known around these parts as the Cotton King, the King of Cotton, J.G. Boswell, some years having as much as 100,000 acres of cotton. Ultimately, his empire even went in to develop the cotton industry in Australia. He's since passed away many years ago, but it's still in the family. But the heart of the old lake bottom is owned by J.G. Boswell. And there's a handful of maybe a couple dozen other farmers that are much smaller. But the only question is, I'm just using numbers that are just very, very rough, but let's just say that's about 150,000 acres. And the question has been, is how much of that land is going to end up in the underwater this year? And when you say underwater, it may be underwater just by a couple feet. You know, that could be what it means. And that's kind of what's happening right now. So I think there's probably going to be about a third of that that's going to be out of production for sure. And then the rest of it depends on how they can handle this snow melt. So this past week, we got back up to normal temperatures, which means warm. It got into the mid to high 80s, even some days in the low 90s. And, you know, by June will be, by the end of May, it'll be the norm will be mid 90s and even into the hundreds. And the real question now is in the different watersheds, there's millions of acre feet, which is how water is measured around here. Millions of acre feet that's still, as you said, in snow. It's at the high elevations of the Sierra Nevadas where that water will begin to melt and it'll come down. And then the question is, can the dams hold it? So one of the successes have been that the dams that you and I have been speaking about the last 60 days, they've been able to drain those down. A lot of that water now has either went out to that old lake bottom or is on its way to the Pacific Ocean. And, you know, that's the sad part is a lot of this water now is going to be lost out to the Pacific Ocean and won't be able to be used. But there's a, you know, it's kind of the next 60 days are critical, really, is what it comes down to. So the water is, it's already going to turn cooler for this week. They're even talking about maybe some sprinkles even. We'll see. That's, you know, pretty unusual, but might see a little bit of rain. Won't be anything significant, but the temperatures will be actually below normal, which is probably good. So a little bit of heat, a little cool down, just trying to take the water out of these rivers as quickly as possible. Plus the spring plantings have begun, so you'll have people are beginning to take out their winter wheat and they're putting in corn for summertime. And so then all of that means that there'll be the rest of the land that's outside of the lake bottom where all of these rivers and tributaries run through. The more water that those farms can take, the better, because it's the less that will actually head out to the lake bottom.
I've seen photographs of buildings, I believe, surrounded by sandbags. Has that happened to some people already, that the lake, that the swampland is too big?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much, that's just that area we're speaking about. So it's a very limited area, but it's the city of Corcoran that sits on the edge of the old lake bottom. And there's a berm around that to protect, there's a berm around that city. And that's where what you're probably seeing. Some of the other farms that are not part of the Boswell company, they're underwater right now and likely will be for the whole summer. And there's still some things to be that are not understood out here. And that is why did some of the lands that are now underwater, and like I said, it's anywhere from 2 to 5 feet. It's a little unusual for that land to be underwater first. And there's kind of some disagreements between the farmers as to why, you know, some of this water didn't go out to the lowest level of the lake bottom, but it's like it got diverted before. And so that's what I think a lot of those pictures are. So historical farms that really had not been underwater before. And that's the important thing we've talked about many times, but if you're a first time listener to John's show, a lot of this, you know, this whole talk about that this is unusual. It's not unusual in the sense that it's never happened. It's just that it happens about every 10 to 15 years or so. So the last time that there was significant flooding in the lake bottom was 1998. Before that, you go back to 1983, both of which years I remember, with 1983 still being the largest. And it's unknown. In 1983, basically that whole 150,000 acres that I described went underwater. And so now they're trying to see, are they going to be able to divert enough water and keep water on the towards the east, closer to the Sierras, you know, use that water before it gets out to the lake bottom. It just all depends on how fast it melts off.
Your concern about the rest of the valley, there was the Success Lake, there's one other lake. Are they all managed now? Are they in shape?
Yeah, there's essentially four. There's five lakes that are on main watersheds that four of those five end up in the Tulare Lake bottom. So those are the ones that we had been discussing. And for the most part, those are, they've managed with the kind of the cooler temperatures and no more rainfall, those lake levels down. But now the question is, the snowmelt starts now, and that snowmelt will continue because there's so much water up there, so much snow. I mean, it's going to continue all the way until September. But the question is, you know, if we were to get, which would not be unusual, but let's say that we get a little bit above average temperatures for a period of, say, 3 weeks to a month, that could bring a lot of that water down quickly. Probably that's the thing. So it's going to turn out cool here for the first part of May. That's a good thing. If it stays average temperatures the rest of the month, that's a good thing. The danger would be very extreme high temperatures for weeks at a time, so that all that water, you know, they want the water basically to come down over a 90 to 120 day period versus coming all down in a 45 day period.
Right.
That's what they're trying to avoid.
So it is the 1st of May. Well, it's going to be the 1st of May. You'll know whether it's going to get worse for Tulare Lake by the 1st of June, and you'll know whether the valley's successful by the 1st of July. I'm looking at a timeline.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you know, this May starting out going to be, all the dams are at the lake levels. They've been able to get them about as low as could be expected, so they feel pretty good about that. And people will watch May. A hot early May is not good. However, you know, we kind of had like I was telling you, a little bit of a hot week last week towards the end of April, a little bit above average, but now going back down below average. So for the next 10 days or so already a third of May, if the weather reports can be believed, is actually going to be below average. And that's a good thing. Because the danger would be above average for multiple weeks at a time. So the slower the runoff can be, the better off everyone is. And I think you hit that number about right. It's really July 1st would be the real damaging time period, because if it got hot and stayed hot for the next 60 days, then all of that water is going to come down before July 1st. And that would be, that's where you would end up with most likely all 150,000 acres of that old lake bottom would be filled up. A lot of that water would just go out the, what's called the San Joaquin River, and it would go all the way out towards to the San Francisco Bay. And the farmers wouldn't even have time to pick up the water to use it. And we'd go from flood immediately to drought.
Devin Nunes is the Devin Nunes podcast, the Devin Nunes videocast. You can find it at True Social, where he is the CEO and the guru. In other words, the drama of the water is not finished, but it's going in the right direction. The next 30 to 60 days, we'll know much more about what the rest of the San Joaquin Valley has to face with the melt. We're going to turn to politics, which became unfrozen these last days because the President of the United States has announced his reelection bid. What does that mean for Washington? What does that mean for California? What does it mean for the nation for the next 19 months till the election? This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with the podcaster and videocaster, Devin Nunes. He is the CEO of True Social. And the President of the United States surprised everyone on Tuesday morning just past. I was on my computer about 5:36 in the morning, and all of a sudden, boom, this video shows up. It's about 3 minutes long, in which the President is very clearly announcing his reelection. It was peculiar for things that I didn't see, so I watched it a couple of times. Maybe I missed things, but I welcome Devin to comment, because the first minute of the three-minute video was not devoted to the President or his accomplishments or the challenges of the next years, but was about January 6th and the former President and the disorder in the Capitol. It was odd. But then we turned to the president making his case. But the case did not include checklist. No mention of Ukraine. No mention of Afghanistan. No mention of recession. No mention of global slowdown. And certainly no mention of the controversies following the pandemic about the school children and how far behind they are. There are other things that were left out as well. And Devin, you're a veteran politician. So I need you to explain to me why the president would not take that opportunity to make the case for things that are on everybody's mind, the recession, the war, schooling for the children who lost a year or 2 years of education. Why didn't he address it?
Well, it was the most unusual time in politics here where we have a president that seems to be completely out of it with the most unusual rollout of a campaign launch in history. You have probably the lowest levels of any president running for re-election from within his own party that who'd actually don't want him to run. I think that's unprecedented. I don't think we've ever seen numbers like that. And then, you know, don't forget we had an unusual week with Susan Rice, who's effectively Obama's right-hand woman, who's in there running the White House for Obama. Most Washington, D.C. insiders see it as basically mostly Obama people running the show with a few of the Biden people that kind of keep Biden going in the general direction that they need him to go, including Biden's wife. But you had even Biden's chief of staff who recently who left. So the day before Biden announces, you have Susan Rice exit stage left. I think a lot of us don't know what to make of that. So clearly Team Obama is making a move somewhere. We don't know where. And then, of course, you have the Tucker Carlson strangeness with Fox News seeming like they're ending his time at Fox, the most popular news host there by far, probably one of the most popular ones in several, probably you have to go to Rush Limbaugh to have somebody that had the same reach, maybe a little bit different conservatism than Rush Limbaugh, but definitely very popular. So a lot of moving parts this week, John, since we last spoke, of things that we, need to try to dissect and try to explain.
Yes. The puzzle, though, is leaving Ukraine out. I do a great deal of reporting on Ukraine. It's dominated the conversation since February of last year. It's drained the resources of our NATO allies. We're told that our arsenal of democracy is not empty, but not comfortably well stocked. And not to mention, there's no easy end in sight. We can count on there being violence and threats and worries between now and the election. Do you think it was deliberately left out? They didn't know what to say? He could have posed with an American flag next to Zelensky. You understand.
Well, the question is, John, does anybody know the truth? Does anybody actually know what's going on in Ukraine, including the Biden administration? Because all the happy talk that we've been seeing for a year, you have enough information just from the people that you interview. And I think, the idea that we don't even see casualty numbers shows us that maybe this is not all that it appears to be, which, is it possible that this is going to blow up in their face? I don't know. I mean, I usually look to some of the guests that are on your show, and, even your guests are across the map on this. And, you don't really have any clairvoyancy on the Republican side. Republicans generally are saying that, they're on the side of Ukraine and they wear a Ukraine lapel pin, but nobody is actually saying, how is it that we're winning this? Nobody's saying how many Russians are dead, how many Ukrainians are dead, which, John, I've just, I used to be the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee and served for, my whole time. We were at war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I'm like, my God, you get up to the date casualty numbers one by one. And, if you were a Republican and if you didn't know the exact casualty account from that week and the total for the war, you were put up as some heartless right winger that just was a warmonger. Well, we since find out that there's possibly, U.S. soldiers in Ukraine, but nobody can really tell you whether that's true or not. So there's just a whole lot more questions here that need answers. But I think your point is a logical one. What is Biden campaigning on?
I don't know. I couldn't tell. What was the theme? Something about finish the job. What's the job? There's never been an Oval Office address about the war. We're at war with a nuclear power that is an alliance with a near peer and a very aggressive predator state, China. No 9 o'clock address. No comments at all about the human crisis of Afghanistan. Nothing. What I've learned about politics over the years is if you have a vulnerability, address it right away. Don't let your opponents define you because you leave it out. Look at what they left out of this video.
Yeah. Yeah. They left out basically everything. And it's quite, look, this is the strangest campaign cycle we've been in for a long time. And it's for them, it's why I left Congress to go and start Truth Social, because we're in a communications war. It's the war of different of the left's propaganda and force feeding it to the American people. It started with Biden running his first campaign from the basement. It was obvious. You had Trump out there getting 10, 20, 30, 50,000 people. You had him being shadow banned by all of the social media companies and the tech tyrants that were out there. Biden pulls off this miraculous victory. And, I know there's people have differing degrees of what the election interference was. But the one thing that we can all agree on is that Zuckerberg put in some $400 and some million into 10 states that gave Biden some 81 million votes. And so you had Trump, who got 75 million votes, which is, 10 or 11 more than any sitting Republican president in history. And he still comes up way short from a guy who campaigned from the basement. Well, now you just have a continuation of that, where the false narratives are laid out there and Biden can get away with just putting out a strange campaign video that, quite frankly, John, I'm guessing that Tucker Carlson's little comeback to, and that he put a video out on social media, some people say that got 60 to 80 million views worldwide. And my guess is that Biden's video maybe got a million or two. I mean, Tucker Carlson maybe got 80, 90 times the number of views of Biden's little video. It's almost like they wanted to be able to announce it, put out a video, and just wanted the propaganda left in the news to say, Biden's running again. He put out a new way video. It was great. And then everybody just stays quiet. And then Biden's just going to go back into the basement. But there is something afoot with Susan Rice quietly leaving out of the White House on the same day that Tucker Carlson and Don Lemon are essentially let go from their prospective companies. So there's something going on with Obama is making a move. Maybe Obama doesn't even know what his move is yet, probably trying to keep the options open. But the likelihood, I still think, is low that Biden will actually be the Democratic nominee. And you see that with the polling. I mean, I mentioned it a little bit that Biden's at historical lows in polling for an incumbent Democrat running for reelection. But also, John, you have somebody who I'm sure you're familiar with, the family from your era. The Kennedy family is now, which was for a long time known and still largely is known as the poster family of the Democratic Party, and this legendary family. I was in the Congress when Ted Kennedy was still alive before he died. There was served with a Kennedy in Congress, and I think there's been Kennedys in either the presidency or the Congress, Senate, et cetera, for nearly 100 years. They're a famed Democratic family. Yet you had the DNC and Biden put out this video and say, no debates. Kennedy? What's a Kennedy? What is that? Who is that? Oh, he's at 20% in the polls right now.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's been totally ignored. You will not read this in 95% of the fake news. Will not say anything about this Kennedy running, who I believe is the son of Robert Kennedy, who was assassinated, what was that, 68?
June of 68.
June of 68. Very outspoken liberal. And he's basically been put off as like he's either described as a nutcase or totally ignored. Right. And John, he's at 20% in the polls. Now, some people pointed this out. You've got the governor of Florida, DeSantis, who is being supported by all of the Never Trump and a lot of the kind of the people who don't like Trump and Wall Street, which is fine. It's their right to do that. And they've been spending some, I'm guessing, well over into the hundreds of millions of dollars over the last couple of years, propping up someone to take on Trump. And yet you have Kennedy, who spent no money, who is polling higher against Biden than DeSantis is against Trump. And that's with full cover of the fake news media. So strange times, my friend, strange times.
Devin Nunes, Devin Nunes podcast, Devin Nunes videocast. You can find them at Truth Social, where he is the CEO. Watching to Laurie Lake gradually fill, we hope, and watching the White House not comment on the pressing matter of the recession, the banking crisis, Afghanistan, Ukraine. Well, this is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.